It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. We're going to talk about so many things, including the big firings at the New Republic, the fork at Node.js, and Jeff has a story he just can't wait to tell you, but won't. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and if you'd like to help us design our new website, I invite you to visit twit.to/navtest. We've got 8 quick questions we'd like to ask you that will help us make the navigation easier to use. That's twit.to/navtest. Thanks a lot. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 279, recorded December 10th, 2014. Making paperclips. This Week in Google is brought to you by FreshBooks, the simple cloud accounting solution that helps millions of entrepreneurs and small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at freshbooks.com/twig. And by Squarespace. Squarespace recently launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7, with a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, new templates, and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace at squarespace.com. Don't forget to enter the offer code TWIG at checkout to get 10% off. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have your whole financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's time for This Week in Google, the show that covers the Googleverse, the Twitterverse, the Facebookverse, the Cloudverse, any verse, whatever. Name your verse, and we'll cover it. With Gina Trapani from the ThinkUp app. At thinkup.com. Great to see you.
Great to see you, too. Glad you're feeling better, Leo.
I am. Thank you so much, Jason, for filling in for me. I appreciate it. You did a great job, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I particularly enjoyed that phone call to Google Help.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
The best things happen when you don't expect that they're going to happen.
You never know.
You just pull up the app to show it off, and suddenly you're talking to Google.
There you go. Oh, hi,
no, it was a lot of fun. I had such a blast hanging out with everybody last
night. You know what's nice for me is I know that if next time I have a bad clam, I've got somebody who can fill in.
I'm here for you.
Jeff Jarvis is also here, the professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York. He is the awesomest. We appreciate all of our hosts. We have such a great team on this show. I love this show.
We appreciate being here.
Do you want to see some ads? Should we kick off with a Moto 360
yeah,
ad?
That's fun.
Yeah, why not?
We're all wearing Moto 360s, aren't we? Gina, do you wear one? I know everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think there's a kind of a consensus in the group among which smartwatch, at least until Apple does theirs. Here's the new ads that just came out. Yeah,
system update.
Oh, Gina just got a system update.
You got a system update to which?
Style.
This might be the wear update.
Oh, nice.
Ooh.
Excellent.
Oh, charge your battery.
I hate it when that happens. So this is the fashion ad, right? To make you think that this is a fashion-forward watch, which I guess of all the watches, it looks the best. Now, what's going on here? Somebody...
There's a few different ads. Burrito goes
Did it pause? Oh, it paused. I just thought this was a very slow ad. No, that's the same one. Let me get out of this.
Go to the web page. Go to the web page. There's a list of them. Yeah, go scroll
down.
Yeah,
there's more. Okay, stop. Stop.
You too can wear expensive suits.
Stop.
And sit in coffee shops.
This is from Creativity Online. The businessman one. All right. What else?
Luxury
down. There's
times.
Down there.
There's more down here?
Yes, scroll. Right. No, too far.
Golf.
Too far.
Moto 360 golf.
No. Fine.
No. What? Where? Show me. I don't see.
No, just go to the middle of the page. There's a whole list. Up a little more. There. See the list?
Wait a minute. Let me get rid of the ad age registration.
Get more from ad age.
There we go. Click through the rest of the ads now. Architect.
We just watched Architect, right? So now Businessman.
I thought we watched Businessman.
Was that what we watched? Why does it say burritos? That's kind of distracting. Okay, here's Architect. These are Apple worthy.
Symmetry.
Symmetry.
But wow. As opposed to Apple, they have a sense of humor.
Right.
That's a field.
Tinder.
Whoa!
You have a new Tinder match. That's cool. I didn't know I could Tinder in my Moto 360. Then they should have said, your wife is calling. All right, this one is couple.
Then you do this to your watch.
Yeah. Cover it. Oh, this is sexy. Sexy, sexy.
Desire. Mom.
Accept my friend request. I'll send it again. That's good.
Okay, all right. All
I'm liking these. Now I'm getting it. Now I'm getting what's going on here. Golf. You want to see golf?
Let's make fun of golf, and then we can move on.
But I'm all right.
Yeah.
Power. Precision.
Your marriage. His wife beeps you late for lunch. Tell me you're close.
Those are great.
No, I'm playing those my powerful great. Golf game. That is nice. Now, is that Lenovo now doing this? It's not Google anymore, is it? Their ad agency is Droga5.
This is Motorola. Oh, I see Lenovo Motorola. I don't know. Right.
Well, I mean, it's an agency, so they hired a good agency, obviously. But that's great. And they had the good sense of humor to roll with it. Nice. So we're getting lollipop everywhere. I just got lollipop on my Nexus 7. You don't have it on yours yet, Jeff, because you have LTE, I gather.
Mm-hmm. As usual, it's like when you're an apps customer. You pay more, you go to the deluxe version, and you don't get things.
Yeah. You know what I did? I decided to wipe this and just make it pure, just so I could experience the pure lollipop goodness. And it really does look nice on this tablet, I have to say. It's very pretty.
So, wait, was it not pure before?
Yeah, it's pure. I mean, just instead of, because you know why? Because I use a launcher. I use Nova launcher.
Right, gotcha.
So I wanted to just have the Google Now launcher, no fancy, the wallpapers. I customize the heck out of these things.
So you're going with the defaults.
Yeah, all default for now. It's quite nice. And I do like, and one of the things I was curious about, and we mentioned before, that the tablet settings, for instance, use the full space. Back to the settings here. They use the full space available, so you get actually all the settings on one, or almost all on one page.
Do me a favor. From the Wi-Fi thing, go back to the pull-down settings thing.
Yeah. No, on this one, it's interesting. I know where you're going on this. If I tap it, it opens the settings.
You can't go from there to Wi-Fi.
Oh.
No, you can't.
Wrong tap.
If you tap the actual icon, that turns on or off. If you tap the word, that takes you to settings.
Yeah, good luck hitting the word.
Oh, you're kidding me.
There we go.
Who the hell would know that?
Oh, long tap doesn't work? Oh.
There you go.
Ask all about Android if you want to know something.
Thank you, Dr. Android.
Tap the word, you get the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Wow.
All these little hidden secrets that Google
Lollipop
just expects
is a
you
lot
to
of
find.
Stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of little stuff in Lollipop.
But, you know, once you discover it, then you know going forward.
So. Moto X, this year's 2014 Moto X got its update last week. What are you getting updated, Gina? Your signature?
This is my Nexus 7 from 2012. This is the original Nexus 7. I really needed to get the new one. And it just lies to me. It just tells me my system's up to date when I know it's not. The thing is, I had this weird bug, and we were just talking about this last on All About Android. I got the system update notification like a week and a half ago, and I was like, great, go! And then it went, and then it rebooted. It was like nothing happened. It was still...
It was a different update.
Yeah, still Jelly Bean. It, you know, so I don't know what's going on. I think I'm just going to... grab the system image and update
it
myself.
That's risky. But we don't recommend that, folks. Sideloading an image is always a bad idea.
It is. But, you know, honestly, this thing is so old and so slow right now. Like, I don't even think Lollipop can save it. It's super stuttery. And it's the old Nexus 7. It's the original Nexus 7. Right. And I've used it a lot.
This one feels a little more sluggish compared to the, you know, the Snapdragon 805 processor phones I've been using. This is a little bit slower, but it's fine. I mean, I really like the Nexus 7, given that it was $250 or whatever, $225.
Yeah, it was so cheap.
It was a great deal. This is 5.0.1 or 5.01, so it went straight to the updated version of Lollipop 5.01, which came out, I think, last week, fixing some of the issues with Android. What do I tap it 5 times and I can play the game? Lollipop, lollipop.
Oh, is this the flappy lolly?
Flappy lolly. Do I hold it?
Yeah, I think you hold on it. There you go.
Floppy pop?
Oh, it's so hard. It's way too hard.
It's next to impossible. The swing from down to up is just so wide.
It's so
you have to
so
get it
wide. Somebody told me you should always go in low.
Yep.
Oh,
so hard. Anyway, it's nice that they built that in.
Yeah, that's way better than the scattering beans.
Well, I don't know. Is it better? Is it?
I don't know.
Me freaking nuts.
It certainly required more programming.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh.
Maybe they just want me to break my Nexus 7. Anyway, nice. The word is going out that the Verizon is doing a soak test on the Turbo, which was nice. This is essentially a Moto X Verizon style. And so that's getting, and it may get voice over LTE, which it lacked. This was kind of a weird Verizon phone because you couldn't do voice and data at the same time as you can with, for instance, the iPhone if you have VoLTE in your area.
Don't get me started.
Rumor has it.
Verizon and LTE.
I know. There'll be a VoLTE update on this when we get that Lollipop. I like Lollipop. I do. I like it. Who does?
The one thing about mine is it's making, it's giving me weird alert noises, and I can't figure out what it's alerting to me. It doesn't show me anything on the screen, so I can't figure out what to kill. But I'll figure it out.
Did you do last week? Because we did it on Twitter, and I love this story, that Google admits that 56% of all ads are not ever seen. They never are on screen for more than a second. 56% of all ads are never even in view. 56%. You pay for them.
We did. I think we did talk about this because I remember Jeff saying that, like, buy an ad in a magazine, you assume that some people were just going to flip past it.
But this is not a magazine.
And TV.
No, I hear you. This is a very trolly headline, though. Advertisers wasted their money on more than half of their ads.
Yeah, no, if you compare it to a magazine or TV, you're right. That happens all the time.
People get up all the time, right?
The big thing in advertising is viewability, and that's what this is about. And so now they're expected to have viewability. The problem is that it immediately deflates the price of advertising. Because all that,
right.
Even though advertising
just says subtract 56%. Yep.
Yeah.
From the total cost. That's why I'll tell you why I like these stories, because I think our ad view rate is a little higher than that.
Oh, yeah.
I know there are some people who skip through our ads.
But you never know when it ends, so you got to be good.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the nature of the medium, though, right? I mean.
Yeah. No, you can never guarantee an ad gets heard. And there's a dirty little secret in podcasting, which is, we count downloads. We don't know if anybody ever played that show. Ooh, I shouldn't say that out loud. Shh. But the same thing with a magazine. You know, they count circulation, not how many people read it. In fact, in magazines, don't they multiply it because they say there's a pass-around rate?
Readership. Yeah, they count readership. When I was a TV Guide, our pass-around rate, the alleged number of people who read every issue of TV Guide was something like 2.5. But of people, it was 8. They presume that 8 people read every copy.
That's such a lie. That's such a lie.
Which means that the copies in doctors' offices were obviously read by 800 people.
That's what brought the average up. Okay. Yeah, you don't see TV Guide in the doctor's office that often.
No.
No.
You don't see TV Guide anywhere anymore.
You know, the real truth of this is that all advertising numbers are lies. The Arbitron ratings, the people meters, all of it's made up. Everybody knows this. Everybody is in cahoots on it. It always comes down to, did you get your money's worth? And it's a little harder for brand advertising because you can't measure sales direct, you know, directly from the ad. All of our advertisers are for the most part anyway, are direct ads. So they can measure sales. And if it, so all it really comes down to is we try to charge as much as we possibly can. As long as they don't lose money on the advertising, everybody's happy. In other words, they make more money than they lose. Return on
Has there ever been any sort of like initiative in podcasting, like to like ping back when somebody plays or anything? But, like, yeah, nothing's ever caught on.
Well, it can't because you'd have to have a special player and special software.
Right.
So, in fact, I think it's Nielsen, one of the rating groups. I think it's Nielsen is getting into podcast advertising along with Adobe, and that's what they propose: is there be an Adobe player that counts? But I don't want that.
It seems like. Yeah, it'd have to be some sort of open thing where, like, you stuffed a pingback URL and a header and every player, you know, look for that URL and hit it, pinged it when the play button was pressed. I mean, the chances of that happening, see, it would have to be extremely wide adoption for a really good reason, right?
It's an imperfect art. It always has been. Jeff, in magazines and newspapers, same thing. And it all comes down to, did Coca-Cola feel like when it bought $1 million ad on the Super Bowl, did it feel like it got its money's worth? And I guess they do research to try to figure out who saw it. But you can't.
Well, but don't forget, there's a moral hazard in here, because ad agencies, for a long, long time, and still to some extent, are paid on how much ad media they bought.
Right.
So it was in their interest to say to the advertiser, "Oh, it was worth spending $100 million because we got our cut of the $100 million."
That actually hurts us because we're cheaper than a lot of mainstream advertising. You know. And so the agencies aren't as incented to place stuff with podcasting because, you know, when they're podcasting, they're only doing $1 million buy, not $100 million buy.
And that's backwards.
Representing their customers' interests, exactly, they would say, let's take the more efficient, lower spend. But that's not their interest. Again, we shouldn't talk about any of this.
Sorry.
Hey, Jeff or Gina, maybe you know. Somebody in the chat room is saying, but doesn't Google charge per click, not per view?
Well, this is not about search ads or AdSense. This is about DoubleClick. Because don't forget that Google serves display a huge, banner huge proportion ads. Of the display ads on the internet. Yes.
And those are charged per impression, not per click.
Yeah, as a rule. Yes. I mean, there's various models.
Right.
But now the interesting thing happens is I don't know if we talked about this in the show, but... Chartbeat, run by Tony Hale, is arguing that the metric we should move to is attention.
Right.
And the problem with the old media metrics of reach and frequency is that's what leads to clickbait and cats, volume, pure volume.
Right.
If you go to attention and how much time is spent exposed to an ad, then you get rid of that viewability problem because you're not exposed to it if you can't see it. And so the Financial Times and Chartbeat are going to charge based on attention minutes for certain demographics, like 10,000 attention minutes of European CEOs. Ev Williams at Medium plans to charge on TTR, Total Time Read, selling it like verifiable TV. And The Economist is now joining in as well. So at a higher level end of content, you're starting to move from pure volume to attention.
I think that's good for everybody. Because then that gets rid of the buzz feeds and all the clickbait and the listicles and all of that. You're really trying to measure what really matters, which is the viewer's engagement with the content.
And the other thing it gets rid of, I think, is what I've come to really despise now is this idea that everybody needs a take. We need our take on this. And, of course, we do that here.
The entire Twit network is based on our take on that.
But if you go to, Google News and you see 1,200 versions of the same story and know that it was reported just once, the amount of resource that went into that, why is that there? It's there because we want more page views.
That's become a real bane of my existence is the kind of the rehash article. Mm-hmm. And everybody does this now. And I always, when we do... we report stories. We try to give credit, by the way, to the originator of the story. And we try to get the original originator, not the rehash. There's one exception there, though. Paywalls. So when Jessica Lessen does some original reporting on the information, or the Wall Street Journal does some original reporting, I often end up quoting the rehash because you can't get past the paywall to see the original reporting. So there's a negative on paywalls, by the way. Not that that matters. I try to give credit to the information. If the information breaks a story, I want them to get credit because I want them to get more subscribers. All right. Now we're really going to go far afield. Do you think about what happened at the New Republic, Jeff?
Oh, this is going to be good.
Now, let me just say, I was a subscriber for years to the New Republic.
Should we recap for folks who aren't media nerds? This is kind of an insider story.
This was a 100-year-old magazine founded in Teddy Roosevelt's living room that represented the progressive. Progressive is kind of an old political term you'll remember from high school, but the kind of progressive left-leaning politics. But it was very much an insider journal for the Beltway. I loved it, read it religiously until Martin Peretz came along, and then I left because I didn't like him. I was concerned about ownership. Chris Hughes of Facebook, one of the Mark Zuckerberg's roommate at Harvard, who was hired in his freshman year at Harvard to work at Facebook, bought it 2 years ago, right? And which I thought was that's a good thing, because here's a very, by the way, Chris Hughes, very smart. Has a great pedigree. Anybody who buys the New Republic presumably understands the value of the New Republic. Most people have never even heard of it.
Campaign after leaving Facebook.
He worked in the Obama campaign. That's right. He was the guy credited with Obama's digital success in 2008. So I thought, oh, good. This is, I was more excited about that than Jeff Bezos buying the Post. Ironically, Jeff has done a great job with the Post, and we'll see what Chris has done with the the New Republic. So this week, the editor in highly regarded editor in chief of the New Republic, I think he was fired. Some say he left.
Well, he had to
ask whether or not he had been replaced. And the answer was yes.
Yeah. So he was fired.
They were going to hire Gabriel Snyder as
from
the digital person
from Gawker.
It turned out that he was the editor, and he had to call. Franklin Foer had to call Chris Hughes to find out whether he was fired or not, right. And the answer was yes.
And then they brought in him. And then the many decades grizzled veteran of reviews quit. And then about 30 editors and contributors said, "That's it, we're out of here." Everybody left.
It was a mass exodus.
And partly because they brought in this digital guy, because what this really is about is something that's happening in every newsroom in the nation. Which is the move you've got to find a way to succeed online. And but unfortunately, they brought in a guy from Yahoo or AOL? I can't remember.
Yahoo.
Who was a little tin-eared, tone-deaf. He didn't pronounce Foer's name right, for one thing, which kind of shows he doesn't even know what he's doing. And then he said, well, we're going to be a vertically integrated digital media property. And we're going to break stuff. And everybody just said, oh, God, not us. But I have to say, some of this looks a little bit like old media rejecting digital ways.
Well, there's a whole bunch of tribes going on here. Now, please do not give any publicity to the name that I'm now about not to mention. But I have very much have a dog in this fight because New Republic ran an 8,000-word personal attack on me.
Really? And oh, I missed that. I got to go find that.
No, you know what that is.
Okay,
we've not discussed it.
Yeah.
And when I wrote a reply, refused to so much as effing link to it.
Was this in the Chris Hughes era?
Yes.
Okay.
So I hate the sons of bitches. I think they're irresponsible dorks. And I think the magazine has been crap for the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And they just tried to become trolls with degrees.
Right.
And so when all this happened... I read a piece, which I think you're going to do a dramatic reading of in a moment. And I tweeted that wonderful piece, and I said it was brilliant. And one of my friends came back and said, oh, how can you say that?
What?
Because what you see is you see the defense of the New Republic. Oh, my God, how could Silicon Valley come into this? And the truth is, Chris Hughes isn't really Silicon Valley. He won the lottery at Harvard to end up as Mark's roommate, and he's a smart guy and did smart things. That's all wonderful, but he's not really a Silicon Valley guy. And hiring sort of Yahoo, I don't even call Silicon Valley. So this is not a war of Silicon Valley versus media, which is how it's been presented. It's kind of a war of new Republicites versus new Republicites. And there's various difficult tribes within the new Republic world. The new Republic world is tiny. There are far more Americans who are saying, what the hell is the new Republic, Maude, than ever read the new Republic in all this coverage. And so they canceled their December issue. They're going to come out next in February. I think it's a big old yawner. I don't necessarily condemn the new regime or condemn the new editor. We'll see how he does. But I think the magazine has been crap for quite some time. And there are those who, just like you, Leo, canceled the prior regime.
Long ago,
Marty
yeah.
Parents owned it.
Yeah.
Long ago, and said it's been crap ever since then. So it's one of those magazines. You know, it's like, I forget, when I went to South by Southwest one year, I forget who it was, asked on Twitter, how do I act like I'm a veteran? And my response was, just complain that it's not as good as last year. I think the same is true of the New Republic.
Yeah.
Is that if by acting like a New Republic reader, you're going to complain about, it wasn't as good as the old days, whatever. It's always been tiny.
What is the circulation? I mean, it can't be more than like 40,000.
About that. And the thing is that what we really see happening here, which of course I celebrate, as I think you do too, unless you want to be curmudgeonly today, is that this idea that we had to have a journal of ideas isn't necessary anymore. We have something called the internet. And yes, it's hard to find, the diamonds in the rough. That's true, but we'll come up with systems for that. There's far more voices than ever existed before. Those efforts wouldn't even so much as link to me when I had something to say that they had caused. That idea that you have the gatekeeper who can be have
you don't want a club
over folks.
You don't want a club. You want to foster. You want to have a place where. So part of the problem is there isn't any money in being this kind of thinker and writer. There never has been. So it was nice that something fostered that and some rich people came along and said, well, we'll continue to pay you. But you don't want it to turn into a club. And so, yeah, I agree with you. And sometimes I feel like this is just old media going, oh, these internet people, they're so disgusting. They're so plebeian. Where is that piece on Medium?
It's on Medium. Hold on here.
Which piece is this?
Oh, I want to read it because it was so funny.
This is the piece. This is Jeff's response to the.
No. This is a send up.
No. This is a piece. Just search for Medium. I quit New Republic, and you'll find
it. I quit.
Oh right, yeah, I quit piece. Yes. it's funny. I never read the New Republic. I've been really interested in Chris Hughes. He's been like the silent founder. He barely had a role in The Social Network. He's like the silent gay founder of Facebook. I don't know him personally, but like I have a couple of close connections. And I found this whole thing really fascinating to witness, just sort of as a drama, because it was this drama going on. But what's interesting is that they sort of cast the Silicon Valley side is anti-intellectual. Like the one of the lines that got quoted was, you know, one of the new regime said, well, I just stopped even reading those long form articles.
Right. TLDR.
TLDR, man. Yeah. Let's disrupt this business. Like, let's just move fast and break things. Like, it was which I find, really funny, because they were sort of acting just like a stereotype of themselves. It felt like it could have been that show on HBO. It seemed like there were many lessons in management to be learned from this scenario, too.
Well, and the thing that's interesting The thing that's interesting is contrasting this to Jeff Bezos' stewardship of the Washington Post, one would expect to be terrible. And in fact, I think the Post has been doing really good work in the last year.
Yeah, but don't build the statue yet.
Okay.
What he's been doing, which has been endearing him to every editor in the shop, is he's been hiring. He's been throwing money at it. Okay. But the most the only thing we've seen so far that's been terribly technologically based is, oh boy, you can get the Washington Post on your Kindle Fire.
Yeah, no revolution in digital there. No.
None. And my hope for Jeff Bezos at the Washington Post has long been, since he bought it, that he would bring his expertise. I mean, I wrote a certain book about the idea that we are going to move to a relationship structure in news, or should. And Amazon knows better than anyone, Jeff Bezos knows better than anyone, how to build relationships of relevance and value for people. And I want him to bring that to the Washington Post.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him just to say, I'm going to make it a hobby and I'm just going to fund
Or a bully pulpit. What makes me nervous. He hired there's a brilliant editor there in Marty Baron, which is great. And Marty is quite amazing and has a great staff, and so that's all good in my little world, my little club. We admire Marty. But then he hired as the new publisher the guy, basically a political fixer in town, guy who doesn't know anything about the internet. He's the guy at who killed TBD, which was a local site in Washington that many of us who care about local news were really putting a lot of hopes on, and it unceremoniously got executed. And that's the guy who's hired to run the business side of the Post. I don't see a lot of vision coming there. And if there's not vision on both the editorial and the product side, then it's going to be trouble. So far, yes, Bezos has thrown money into the Post. So far, Marty Baron's doing really good things with that money. But I was hoping for a lot more experience and vision from Jeff Bezos and the Post.
Here's what I'm hoping
for. What you're hearing is
that he is quite rightly trying to get everything up to snuff, get a great quality product, and is willing to, because he's got deep pockets, defer this larger problem of how do you make this work in a modern digital age after he learns and builds.
We don't have the time to defer.
Why not?
Time to defer. I think he's going to start experimenting.
I think he will at some point, yeah. But I'm glad he didn't just jump in.
But I thought that's what's going to happen, and I was giving that all the time. I just see the uh-oh sign I see is that the guy he put in charge couldn't be more old media.
Aren't publishers always, though, horrible? Aren't publishers are the sales guys.
No, because that's our hubris in the editorial side, where what we should be doing is putting visionaries on the business side as well and business strategies. You've got a business vision.
Well, it needs to be viable, right?
Yeah, but we got to find some. So
and it has to be modern.
Enough of the. I'm sorry.
Inside baseball, but I knew as soon as I read it, I said I have to ask Jeff. Do you think
this is how I get in trouble for Gina not getting enough airtime?
By the way, this is the Washington Post's opinion piece on this was the New Republic is dead, thanks to its owner Chris Hughes. They blamed him. What do you think? You said you know Chris a little bit, or
no.
Chris is
a
very
nice
guy, very smart guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've heard, I know friends who know him. I'm interested to see what he does. I think he's done a lot of interesting things in his career, and so I think he's got a shot at turning New Republic into something new and different. I just think that this was not the most. It was an inauspicious beginning, the shakeup, the shakedown.
Yeah.
I enjoy this time of year because all these media companies go through these big sort of shakeups. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I'm definitely going to watch. I think he has a shot at doing something good. I just don't think this was a good start.
I think you're right, Gina. And I think I didn't necessarily like the product before, so maybe it's good news that the people who ran that product are out and we have new people in.
France was no.
While we're on Inside Baseball, something just happened just before we got on the air that's huge in my world, which is Alan Rusberger, the editor of The Guardian, who I think is the best editor, newspaper editor of any newspaper whose language I could possibly read in the world, is stepping down to head the trust that owns The Guardian, and he'll be replaced next year. That's gigantic news in my field. So I'll end my geeking now, and you can do your dramatic reading.
Actually, the big news in my field broke last night, which is that HBO is going to start putting its content on the web this spring. And that the guy they brought in to run their digital, streaming platform quit in disgust.
Yes. Yeah, speaking of dramatic firings, HBO CTO is out.
Yeah, because HBO realized after the Game of Thrones debacle earlier this year that this guy didn't know how to do anything and that this team he had built was ineffective. So they're going to Major League Baseball to stream the content. They already do it for wrestling. MLB does a great job of streaming content, right?
Yeah, why build it? If it's right. There was another argument this week in my world. The CEO of The Guardian, Andrew Miller, said newspapers shouldn't be technology companies. That's not what's going to save us. And then a lot of my friends got all angry and thought that was haughty. I couldn't agree with them more. HBO is – I don't go to HBO because it knows how to do code. I go to HBO because it knows how to do shows. except for the newsroom, which is junk, and I can't wait for it to end, and it's almost over. But anyway, HBO's core competence is not how to build a player.
No.
And the tech guys who think they always have to build it themselves.
So they hired this guy, and he brought in a bunch of Microsoft cronies. They have a big office.
Well, that tells
Otto Berkes, or Berkes, as CTO. He's been there for a few years. He brought in people from Microsoft, set up a large office in Seattle, 55 engineers, laying off a number of longtime employees in HBO's New York headquarters. The this is from Fortune magazine. The Seattle office, which is rumored to cost HBO as much as $100 million per year, has been the source of internal squabbling at the company. Insiders accused Berkes of building a Napoleonic empire within HBO. He resigned in disgust after being informed that he wasn't going to be doing the streaming. But also, I think very interesting that HBO has finally pulled the trigger. I think it remains to be seen if you'll have to demonstrate that you have a cable subscription. But they've been making noise about this for some time. If they disintermediate the cable companies, that's the beginning of a big move to
that is. TV. But Leo, we've been saying that. How many often have you said that? Here comes the thread to pull in the sweater.
Yeah. Well, this is HBO is a big thread.
Oh, it is. It is.
Yeah.
And they've got a deadline. They've got a public deadline. Game of Thrones premieres April. In the spring.
Yep.
And the streaming has to be flawless, yep. right? So, yep. I mean, it sounds like this guy just wasn't able to ship on time.
Well,
there's a bug he knew about but didn't do anything about.
Yeah, he knew about a memory leak bug, and he's for 9 months, and he didn't fix it, and then that brought down the Game of Thrones streaming.
Yeah, HBO Go. And this is the thing. People pay a lot of money for HBO. They expect HBO right. Go to work. It's, you know, that's just... That sounds like a good,
baby.
Right decision. Yeah.
I have some personal news. Today, I resign from the New Republic, but I am excited to join Fusion, which I'm also resigning from effective immediately, to start a new adventure at BuzzFeed. An adventure, I might add, which ends today, because I've been hired by Vox, from which I must summarily tender my resignation in order to join the amazing crew at The Intercept, who have been so kind to me in the single minute that I spent there before letting them know that I am moving on to fire up my career as a freelance writer. Get at me, editors. And now, please stop getting at me, as the life of a freelance writer has proven too difficult, but not as difficult as the decision to join and then quit from and then again join The Atlantic. This is a wonderful Medium piece by Jason O. Gilbert, and I love the illustration of a revolving door at the head of this.
Inside building, outside building.
It's very funny, and it goes on and on and on and on and on.
It's just great.
But I really loved that. I just had to laugh out loud when I read that. And I don't know who Jason O. Gilbert is, but he's got a fine touch. And he should find a job at the New Republic.
And he clearly has lots of media type friends who announce their new gigs very often.
Yeah.
So
we've all seen these emails, haven't we? Yeah. Or tweets.
I feel like my tweet stream,
he's
I'm friends with a lot
Yahoo
of writers.
Tech.
Yeah. I am beyond thrilled, however, to announce that I am launching a new media startup in collaboration with Tina Brown and the puppet Smarf from Too Many Cookies. As I leave today, due to disagreements with investors over the direction of the publication, as well as a series of two public arguments over usage of the office refrigerator with Smarf, I can only say I'm so proud of what we might have accomplished had I not been engaged full-time in searching for other jobs in media, accepting other jobs in media, and poring through my thesaurus for synonyms to the word thrilled.
So well done.
Nice.
You know, there's news in your old world. Nick Denton announced the so-called unclenching. What do you interpret from this? So Nick is now stepping down as CEO and has a board of like 40 people who are going to...
Nick Denton is the founder and publisher of Gawker, we should say.
And my former employer.
Where Gina started Lifehacker. Yep.
Yes, Lifehacker is a Gawker site. I ran the site for 5 years. I founded the site. I own stock in Gawker. Gawker's is I haven't been there for years, 5 years now. And Nick wrote a 15-page essay. Which, you know, the short version is he wants to blog again. He doesn't want to be the president of the company and the single point person to run the entire company. The company's huge now. And so he's assembled a team of 7 executive managers to run the company, and he wants to write more, which I'm very excited about because Nick is actually an extremely smart and good writer. So brilliant. I'm happy to see him writing again. But yeah, I thought that the essay is very, very long and probably wouldn't amuse anyone else as much as it amused me. It's very Nick. It's very transparent, which is kind of what Gawker does, right? They turn things inside out. So
Tommy Craggs, who's at Deadspin, is now the executive editor over all eight flagship titles. Unlike this, Nick writes, "We'll return to our mission. More linebackers with fictional dying girlfriends, less pandering to the Facebook masses."
Yeah, I love that.
Less clickbait, in other words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But his point is more investigative pieces.
They want to break stories. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And they want to speak truth to power. And they want to stay independent. They've never taken any sort of funding. They want to keep growing, which they have been. I mean, Gawker's done really well. And every December, January, there's a reckoning there. And there's some sort of reorg. And there's a kind of a refocus. And this, I think this one sounds good. I think that Nick is now not running a small company anymore. When I started there, you know, it was just a couple of people that he, you know, PayPal'd a couple bucks a week to write, you know, one or two sites. And now it's a giant company with, you know, HR and all hands meetings.
$60 million revenue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gawker, Gizmodo, Deadspin. What's Deadspin? Politics?
Sports.
Sports. Jezebel. IO9. Jalopnik. That's cars. Kotaku. That's gaming. And I love it. He says it's Lifehacker. Oh, beloved Lifehacker.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Lifehacker's burden was always it's not we anymore, but Lifehacker's kind of like the nice site in the group.
Right. You know, no gossip.
The whole Gawker group is, yeah, it's not gossip. It's not snark, right? It's just helpful. So we were always sort of like the black sheep tonally anyway. And I'm really happy to see that the current team has kind of kept up with that. But yeah, I like that he said beloved Lifehacker.
Yeah. He says, we haven't been ourselves lately. Editorial traffic was lifted, but often by viral stories that we would rather mock. We, the freest journalists on the planet, were slaves to the Facebook algorithm. The story of the year, the one story where we were truly at the epicenter, was one that caused dangerous internal dissension. We were nowhere on the Edward Snowden affair. We wrote nothing particularly memorable about NSA surveillance. Gadgets felt unexciting. Celebrity gossip was emptier than usual. Boy, I hope he's sincere, and I hope this is the direction they take. That's great.
Well, Nick is highly self-critical, always has been, always rose the other way. Nick's brilliant. I mean, he's just amazing. I was on the board of his last company, Moreover, and I once said to him, it was in the middle of the crash, and I said, "Boy, Nick, it's a good thing you raised too much money. You raised a lot of money. You know, the company's surviving through this." And he said, "No, Jarvis, it's the worst thing I ever did." Meant that the CEO could go off and go down rabbit holes. That was wrong. And that's just the way Nick is. He just, you ever think he's going to go this way, he zigs that way. And has a good reason to do so.
I hope this is the beginning of a lot of these companies kind of eschewing the clickbait, the listicle, the Facebook news algorithm, and starting to try to create good content on its own face and not worry about virality.
Well, we need business models to support that.
Yeah, well, that's always been the problem, hasn't it?
Because all we did was import the old volume metrics.
Right. It ain't about volume.
Nope.
$60 million is pretty decent. I could see Twit becoming a $60 million company.
Yeah.
We're on our way there. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break, and we will continue with more. Jeff, Gina, Leo, this is Twig. Yes, there's Google News, and there's the Google changelog. Let's not forget that. Yeah.
Never.
Never. But first, a word from FreshBooks. If you're a freelancer, you know the pain of the 31st of the month when you've got to fire up Microsoft Word and create invoices, stamp them, and mail them. There's a better way. That's what FreshBooks did for me. 2004, I was doing that. Amber MacArthur said, "You ought to try FreshBooks. Nice little company here in Toronto. It's a cloud accounting solution, and it changed my life. There are now 5 million people who have used FreshBooks to run their business. The easiest way to invoice clients, organize expenses, and track your time. You'll spend less time on paperwork." In fact, they've done studies of FreshBooks customers. For instance, FreshBooks users free up on average of 2 days a month that they aren't doing the invoicing and the accounting. They get paid on average 5 days faster. That's because it's easy for your clients to pay with FreshBooks. And here's my favorite. On average, FreshBooks customers double their revenue in the first 24 months. It's good for business. because the more you know, the less friction involved in things like invoicing and billing and tracking your time. For instance, the FreshBooks app on your phone will track your time, and you can take pictures of your receipts, keep track of your expenses. If clients are late paying, automated late payment reminders help you get paid faster and without those nervous-making emails and phone calls. Are you keeping your receipts in a shoebox? I was. Snap photos of receipts right from your phone. Track expenses easily. And you can connect your FreshBooks account, Google Apps, so you can stay on top of your small business without breaking your workflow. And, man, your accountant will love it. Come tax time, you'll be feeling so good. Bennett Coleman, one of their users, he's a web designer and developer, says, I seriously don't get excited about accounting. Who does? But I love FreshBooks. I love setting up recurring hosting invoices. I do, too. It could not be. I really love FreshBooks. I want you to try it free. 30 days, no obligation. Just go to FreshBooks.com/twig. If they ask, how'd you hear about it? Mention This Week in Google, if you would. Be nice. Start your 30-day free trial today. FreshBooks.com/twig. I love FreshBooks. I do. Now let's play the drums, break out the trumpets. I don't see a Google change
log. Sound the kazoos.
Is there a Google?
Oh, it's here.
It is.
It's
there.
It's there.
The Google change log. And now here's Gina Tremonti, who's all bundled up in the winter snow.
In the snow.
To bring us this holiday change log.
Got a couple little new features here and there to talk about. Google Plus. Two new things in Google Plus. First, now you have the ability to pin a post at the top of your profile, your Google Plus profile. This used to be only available, to brands and pages, but now personal profiles have this. So the feature is similar to Twitter's pinned tweets. It means that anybody who visits your profile will see the pinned post, and you can do any kind of content, videos, links, etc. And the pinned posts are viewable to Android and web Google Plus users with iOS support coming soon. So posts stay pinned until you manually unpin them. The other thing that Google Plus got was some expanded gender identity options. So used to be when you filled out your Google Plus profile, you chose male, female, or other. The gender field now has four entries. It's male, female, declined to state, and custom. And if you choose custom, you can fill in however you want to identify. And you can still limit who you can see your gender, just like you can do now. And that feature, the gender feature, is rolling out for all users over the next few days. Google brings My Maps to Google Drive. So if you go into Google Drive and you click on the red new button and you go to the more, you can choose My Maps. And this is the custom map creation tool, lets you create maps and share them. This update's rolling out over the next week or so. I already have it. So you can create maps in Drive, but you can also do all the things you can also do in Drive, just organize these maps in folders, search them alongside your other files, and share them easily. The My Maps tool also gets a couple of other functional improvements. You can add more layers and points of interest to user-generated maps, too. So nice kind of interesting differentiation between Google Drive and, say, like Office 360, for example. Google Hangouts got a couple of new neat features. I really like this one. When someone asks you if you're doing a Hangout with someone and someone says to you, where are you? Hangouts will automatically detect that someone has asked, where are you? And prompt you with a share your location button. So you can just tap share your location and drop a pin on a map, and it'll send the person your location. So a nice kind of one-time way to say, here I am. And Hangouts automatically kind of detects that someone asked you that. So really, really, really neat. Of course, there's location sharing in Hangouts already, but this is just a little extra prompt in case you forgot it's there and someone's asking where you are. There's also a couple of other little features in Hangouts, new stickers, a couple of Easter eggs. If you tap happy birthday, you get a little visual. You got to apply filters to video chats like sepia or vignette, black and white. Your contacts also now show last seen timestamp, so you can see the last time that someone logged in, and really, really get creepy on it about keeping track of your friends. Sorry, I said creepy because, Jeff. Sorry, Jeff. Jeff, actually, speaking of, I wanted to ask you, are you on the dev channel for Chrome OS? Because there's a new smart lock has been rolled out to the Dev Jam.
For this,
me too. This is so cool.
Yeah, yeah. So this new feature that we heard about at Google I/O, which lets you keep your Chrome OS running laptop unlocked with having your Lollipop phone in the vicinity, right? So it knows you're there and it logs you into your laptop. So this has been a part of Lollipop since Lollipop came out, but just now this feature is rolling out to Chromebooks running the Dev Channel only. So if you're not on the Dev Channel, you won't see this, but it's good news that it's in the Dev Channel because that means it'll be in stable very, very soon. Very, very convenient unlocker.
And I do use this, though, Gina. My Moto 360 keeps my Nexus 6 unlocked.
Yeah, that's
so
really nice.
There'll be a three-way here where my 360 will keep my phone unlocked, which will in turn keep my laptop unlocked.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm a little bit like, maybe I got to figure out how to set up my dev environment on a Chromebook because, man, that Pixel, it's nice. It's really, really nice.
Flaky. It's pretty flaky.
Is it? What's flaky?
The dev environment.
Oh, the dev build.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I even on the Mac stopped using the beta version of Chrome and on my phone.
Yeah.
It just, even the beta version's gotten a little bit cranky.
Yeah, yeah. The beta version had this bug where I would tap the menu and it would just crash.
Yeah,
like
that's
a known bug. It's unstable.
Yeah.
But once I wouldn't go with Dev. I might go with beta. But yeah, I hear you.
And is Dev Canary? That's Canary, right?
That's Canary. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I'm excited to see that come down. Once that's down and stable, though, I'm kind of like I'm going to use my Pixel a little bit more because that's just cool. Finally, Android Wear just has an update rolling out. I think it's Android Wear 5.0. And in fact, I literally just got the notification that I had a system update. I tapped it and it said that I have to charge my battery and my charger's upstairs. So I'm on the edge of my seat here. But Android Wear 5.0 has a couple of new neat features. First, it's got the launch of the official Watch Face API. This means, thank goodness, that we'll have custom watch faces by designers you actually like and things that you know that you actually want your watch to look like. And you'll see even in the Play Store, I think Facer is one of them. A few different apps now are plugging into the official Watch Face API to offer new watch faces. And in fact, I believe the Play Store has a new section. Thank you, Jeff, for dropping this into the changelog. Just for Android Wear watch faces, watch face options. So really good, exciting stuff there for people who want to customize their watch. Android Wear 5.0 also has a couple of other new updates. There's a new navigation feature, which gives you the ability to bring back cars that you may have accidentally dismissed. When you tap on the watch face, the list of actions that you can do is now reordered based on how recently they were used, which is nice, a little smarter. And it's got new modes, including theater and sunlight that lets you keep the screen dim or boost the brightness. So for those of you with Android watches, look for that system update card because it'll be coming soon. And that's all I got.
That, my friends, is the Google Change Log. The end.
The end.
Node.js is forking. Somebody in the chat room said, do you think they'll cover that on this show? Well, if we don't cover it on This Week in Google, what would we cover it? Actually, I'm a little concerned about this because it is our plan to do the front end of our new website in Node.js.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Node.js, I didn't know this. It's while it is open an open source project, is owned in its entirety by Joyent.
Is it owned or is it the folks who lead it are employed
work
by
at Joyent? I guess I don't know. You can clarify this for me because it sounds like there is a group of people who aren't thrilled about Joyent's influence over Node.js.
Okay, so it sounds like Joyent is Node's official sponsor. Okay, and so they're kind of in charge of stewardship, the way that Google is in charge of the Android
it's
open
not so
source
bad
project,
necessarily.
For example.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
However, forking. Now, so I should explain what Node.js is, I guess. The idea is to use JavaScript to. It's server side or client side. It's a little both, right?
It's a little of both, but it's server side JavaScript.
Primarily server side JavaScript to do websites,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very modern, and cool kids are doing it.
It's true. It's true. Node is the new hot thing. Everybody loves Node.
Yeah, but I'm worried because if it's forked, that means there will be at least two nodes of Node.js. Actually, Joyent in the latest, this isn't Joyent. Apparently, has been fighting this off for a while. So they created an advisory board to offer community input into Node.js. So last week, some of the developers, contributors, not developers, in the open source world, they're called contributors, forked the project, creating io.js. The schism, according to this article at Read Write by Lauren Orsini, the schism surprised the open source community as well as its corporate overseer, Joyent. Isaac Shoeleader has put out a statement saying he's one of the contributors. He's Node's former project lead and its number two contributor. Says that io.js will not compete with Node. And that once, he hopes, the two projects will merge back together once the company resolves issues related to its management of the project. So it is a little dissatisfaction with Joyent's involvement.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, this sounds bad. It's not so bad, though. I mean, Node has enough momentum behind it. It really depends on the people who leave and fork off. And, you know, maybe this is a lot of times a way that an open source project resolves issues, you know?
I mean,
you vote, when enough people vote with their feet, if it's io.js does certain things that the community loves that Node.js hasn't done, they'll figure out a way to merge back together. I mean, in some ways, it's like, hey, you know, this is a way that innovation happens. It just seems like it's, you know, it feels like a splintering. And in this case, it really does seem like there's a genuine conflict here. But I don't think Node.js is going to go away.
Yeah.
It'll be around in some form. Look, if at some point in 2 years, Leo, you have to upgrade from or laterally grade from Node.js to io.js, like that won't be a big deal. So I wouldn't be worried about your project.
Oh, we're going to use Angular anyway. It's the new hotness. All right. I come here. I know when I read these stories, I know that I can come and Gina will explain this all to me. I read about the New Republic and I know I can come here and Jeff will explain it all to me. That's why you guys are here, to help me understand what's going on. So thank you. Eric Schmidt says, hey, don't worry about the killer AI robots.
That has been an amazing story, hasn't it? Everybody's been going berserk on that. You know, even Elon Musk has been saying that AI is this huge danger.
I'm not sure I disagree. We've had a number of interviews on triangulation on this subject, including a guy named Barrett who wrote a book, Our Last Invention. Now, he's not a scientist or a computer programmer. He's a journalist, but he has talked to a bunch of people in artificial intelligence, and he says there's a surprising consensus in the AI community that now is the time to start
thinking. You know what I think it is, Leo? I think that's hubris in the AI community.
We're going to get really smart machines. Yeah.
We're really dangerous. We're not nerds anymore. We could kill everybody. Watch out. That's how. show me how far along AI is, except trying to kill two guys on Jeopardy.
We had a guy who, Nick Bostrom, who is one of these really top academics in this area. He's written a book called Superintelligence. He was on 2 weeks ago on triangulation. He's a kind of interesting multidisciplinary thread. He's a philosopher and a scientist. He teaches at Oxford. And his thesis is, it's not going to happen. He says, we don't know when. It could happen as Ray Kurzweil says, in the next few decades, it could happen in 200 years. But at some point, you're going to create intelligent machinery. And he said, the problem is we don't have any kind of fundamental ethical basis for how this machinery should be designed so that it doesn't. He says, for instance, if you created the ultimate paperclip-making machine, eventually it would turn the whole world, including all humans, into paperclips. And so the time is now
to decide how many paper clips we want,
to think about these issues so that when they do get, as they get smarter, that we're prepared. He said, we know, you know, Asimov's robotic rules are not right. They're not sufficient. They have all sorts of, it's almost, you almost need somebody to work on this like a Bertrand Russell. This is kind of this higher order philosophical, ethical, scientific thinking that. But anyway, Eric Schmidt says, relax. I trust Eric. He knows. He says, these fears are normal. He was speaking at a Financial Times conference. They're also, to some degree, misguided. Don't fear artificial intelligence. Welcome our new overlords.
I like the photo of Schmidt that they chose for the Business Insider article.
Yeah, what is he pushing up his? What is he doing there?
Yeah, it's sort of pushing up.
And he's like a tiny little man. Schmidt admits sitting shotgun in a self-driving car is not an altogether happy experience, i.e., terrifying. But you don't have to worry about machines stealing our jobs and taking over the world. According to Schmidt, people have been concerned about machines taking over the world for centuries. That doesn't make it okay. That doesn't make it mean that's wrong. Go back to the history of the loom. There was absolute dislocation. But I think all of us are better off with more mechanized ways of getting clothes made. There's lots of evidence that when computers show up, wages go up. See, he's not really addressing these issues. And I think people who are really involved in AI, you're right, there's hubris. Because there is the underlying assumption that at some point we will make an intelligent machine. But do you think, Jeff, that we should pretend that we should act as if we never
were? No, we should. You're absolutely right. We should have the discussion. But guess where that quickly goes? It quickly goes to, why don't I pick on them? The EU passing laws limiting a technology that's not even invented yet.
Well, none of these AI experts want that. This is their meat and potatoes. No, they want to have AI.
But I'm just saying, beware.
Yeah, I agree.
The techno panic that will inevitably emerge.
And that's,
I'll be back on the show in a few months, and we'll see people screaming somewhere in the world.
No, that's right.
Not just Europe, demanding regulation of artificial intelligence. For God's sakes, the smartest man on earth says that we're in trouble. The craziest man on earth, God bless him, Elon Musk, says we're in trouble. We must do something. And we're at the point now where, as soon as new technologies come out, they get regulated. At least they're out.
Regulation won't stop this anyway, because this is going to continue. This is, Ned Ludd and his Luddites didn't stop Jacquard looms either. So I don't think – I agree. You don't want this whole techno panic thing to get out of control. And, of course, you know what? You can also predict that it will, Jeff. But it's not going to stop it. I don't know. I don't know. You and I will be long dead.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. You kids, go ahead and do whatever you want. I don't care. Make paper clips.
Turn everybody into a paper clip.
I don't care. Google's road to virtual reality begins with cardboard. I love my Google Cardboard.
I still think cardboard's amazing.
Well, apparently, Nicole Lee, who we know very well, she worked for us for a long time, and she's at Engadget. She says, I thought cardboard was dumb, but I was wrong. Cardboard is there's a cardboard SDK, not only for Android, but for Unity, which is a very powerful gaming platform. A lot of games are written in Unity. Maybe we're going to see more for cardboard. This is Google's response to Oculus Rift and the billions of dollars that Facebook spent on Oculus Rift. Oh, you just need a little cardboard at a smartphone. It's good. It's a good article Nicole wrote on the history of cardboard.
It's so interesting to me that they named it cardboard, because it's funny. Like, we were talking about the Samsung Gear VR last night on All About Android, and our guest, and I was saying, you know, putting that thing up on my face, I just don't want to do it, right?
Yeah.
But cardboard looks like a kid's project. I mean, you know, it sort of makes fun of itself just by the fact that it's Velcro and stickers and magnets, you know, and I just think that Google did the right thing by calling it cardboard and making it this thing that you fold up, you know, the thing that you keep on your desk. So when your coworkers come over, they're like, oh, let me check this out. You know, whereas the Gear VR like kind of takes itself so seriously that I think it turns off people because it's just this giant thing strapped to your head.
Well, and ironically, I think the functionality of Google Cardboard is no less than the functionality of the, because you still need a Samsung phone in the Samsung handset.
It's not that much less. I mean, probably technically it's probably very much less, but it's not less enough for anyone who's a casual user to notice. You know what I mean? So I feel like cardboard is going to do more for VR than something like even Oculus or, yeah. or the Gear VR. And I just think that this is a brilliant, kind of an uncharacteristically brilliant marketing or naming thing that Google did here. I was like, oh yeah, this was the right way to do this. And the way they just sort of offhanded joke that, you know, they threw off at the keynote.
At the Google I/O, they handed these out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leo.
What?
Leo, my big question is, will a Nexus 6 fit?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's a really good question. No, is it no?
No. I don't think so. Jason, you have yours? All right, we're gonna find out. I have my cardboard here. Thanks to, by the way, Gina, who brought me this bag from Google I/O. She made it. She made it. Okay, in the back seat of a car.
Okay. I refused to look at the directions, by the way. I just fumbled with it.
Well, it kind of fit.
Yeah, you'd have to just fold it a little differently.
Just make a bigger one. You need a jumbo cardboard.
Yeah, they're going to have to do different sizes of cardboard now.
And it has NFC in it, so you could, you know what? That's the beauty of cardboard. you can easily cut it. It doesn't matter. Oh, my cardboard's running. Wait a minute. So the NFC kicks in, and it says, put on your viewer. Now, what do you want to do? Do you want to do it? I got to take off my glasses. Do you want to do airplane? Wait a minute. I got cardboard.
There's a new store for things. Are there new apps up yet?
You know, I don't know if there is a cardboard app.
Paul McCartney concert, a Volvo.
Pull and release ring to click. That's not working. This cardboard is a little funkified. But I.
Gina.
Maybe because Gina didn't read the rules.
It's possible that it's because I didn't read the instructions.
No, this used to work, but it's just been lying around. That's all. It may be that this Droid Turbo. Doesn't so I could show you. See, it's a stereo thing. So there's stereo eyepieces in here, and then the phone immediately when you put it in senses, I guess via NFC, that it should launch the cardboard app. If you have the cardboard app, it'll launch, and you could see it then has. Can you see that? It has a left and right screen. So this says pull ring to release, but when you look at it through the stereo viewer, you see one image. It's going to be a 3D image, but the clicking's not working, so I have to work on that. That might be a Droid Turbo issue. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But people are making cardboard. Dodo Case is making you can buy it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Dodo, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
That happened almost like the day after Google I/O.
Yeah, I'm looking at imcardboard.com. There's tons of different colors
get plans.
And models.
I bet you they're going to make one for the Nexus 6. Just the right size.
Yeah, just the right size. Yeah.
Here's the Google Play store page.
Oh, there is
apps
quite a bit.
For
oh, and
Google
the apps
cardboard.
For cardboard. Yeah, yeah.
Now I think Dodo Case is overcharging for their cardboard. It's $25.
Wow.
It's pretty much the same.
Well, Dodo Case is it's premium, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it looks like premium. Yes, it's premium cardboard.
Premium
made
cardboard.
From actual trees. I don't know.
Is it like? I wonder if they're making it with books.
Oh, it's upside down.
No, this looks like regular corrugated cardboard.
Yeah, it's regular cardboard. I don't know why they charge so much. New capacitive touch button mechanism works with all devices, including iPhone 6. What?
Does it come assembled? Or
Oh, look at that! Oh, this it launched the hat. You know the Moto X hat thing. There's the mouse. A little Django, fake Django. I'm sorry.
This is Twitch for stupid people.
The problem with VR is that watching other people do it is completely unsatisfying.
I should do a Twitch channel. So just me doing this. That would be a good Twitch channel. I want to do a Twitch channel that's called The Dumb Gamer or The Bad Gamer, where I'm clueless. Like, it's like grandma.
I like that.
Wouldn't that be good? Oh. What do you do now? Shoot. He's shooting at. What? Unofficialcardboard.com has two sizes, classic and large. So you can, Jeff, get one that will fit your Nexus 6. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. And, this is pretty cool.
I haven't even opened mine yet from Google I.O. At this point, I'm like, I'm holding on to it in its unopened form.
Oh,
we'll see what happens.
That's like an action figure in the box.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is, box.
That is valuable. That's how I felt. Very valuable stuff.
Unfolded cardboard.
I've got mint cardboard.
Original.
This is where it all began, kids. And then the robots took over. And, well, ever since we've been living in the sewer pipes under town.
Everything turned into paperclips.
Yep. But there's a no paperclip shortage, I can tell you that. Let's see, what else? God, you put so many stories in here. I don't know what even to look at. What do you guys like? Pick a story. Tell you what, I'll take a break. You pick, Gina, pick one. Jeff, pick one. We'll be back in a second after this word from Squarespace. That's my pick, the place to make your next website. The best hosting plus the best software merged together to make it not only easy for you, but great for your clients, your customers, your readers. If you're a blogger, a photographer, if you're a band, if you want to sell stuff online, Squarespace 7 is here, which makes it absolutely easy, completely redesigned interface. In fact, now they have templates for specific businesses. They've been working with businesses to help set these up. So if you're a band, for instance, the Horizon template has tour dates, music player, and a merch store. If you're an artist, an architect, a chef, they've got category-specific templates just for you. But the truth is, any Squarespace template can be used to do anything. It's so gorgeous. Easier editing, too, now. You can live edit right on one screen. No more toggling between site manager and preview mode. You can even preview your design in a device mode so you'll know what your site looks like on a tablet or a phone. All Squarespace sites are mobile responsive. They use state-of-the-art technology to make sure your site looks absolutely stellar and unique, which I think is important. These aren't cookie-cutter templates. This is amazing. Plus, you get instant access to professional stock photography from Getty, instant branded email set up with Google Apps, a developer platform that's second to none. If you are a developer, you're going to love this with its editor with syntax, color coding, and more. E-commerce enabled on every single site for all subscription plan levels. And, man, do they have the best help in the world right from their offices 24/7. Plus a portal for self-help with articles, video workshops. All this as little as $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. Best thing to do, go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, and play with it absolutely free. You don't even need to give them a credit card. You can also try out their free apps, the Portfolio, the Note, the Metric, the Blog app. Note and Blog are now available on Android, too. Note is just a note-taking app. Blog app lets you post to your site, moderate comments. The Metric app lets you measure social follows, visitors, and all of that. Best hosting, best software. What more could you ask for? Start that free two-week trial right now at squarespace.com. And if you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIG to get 10% off. I love it. And by the way, if you're one of the people who's been listening to our ads and already has a Squarespace site, you can just go to the Settings tab and activate Squarespace 7. You'll love all the new features. Squarespace. Start here. Go anywhere. Squarespace.com. Are you guys using Inbox still?
I never switched over to it because they don't support Google Apps yet.
Oh, that's
I'm
right.
I'm waiting impatiently.
There was an AMA with the Google Inbox developers, and they say they know this, and they're working on it.
They're working on it, yeah. The uptake has been good. I mean, I think everyone agrees it's a hit.
Good, because I am hooked.
Yeah, I'm dying to use it. I really am.
Love it. And Jeff, you have the same problem, right? You're an apps user.
Same problem. So I go, yeah. It's the account I don't want to go to because it's my university account that got all messed up with stuff I don't read.
They are going to start allowing support for more than just Gmail, a unified inbox for all your email addresses. Cross-browser support. I didn't know this, but you can only use it in Chrome right now. That's what I use, so I never noticed.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They are going to make it work with Safari. And presumably
I think
other browsers.
Yeah, Uber was complaining about that.
Yeah. They do say, I thought this was the most encouraging, Jason Cornwell, who's the interaction designer. Hi, Jason. We know you watch. Jason said there's a long list of Gmail features that will eventually come to Inbox. In other words, parity with Gmail.
Hmm.
We really want to balance building those features with building out new features that continue to improve the inbox product concept. Undo send tool. I don't care about undo send. Yeah, you use that a lot?
Yeah, there's times I wish for it.
Drunk emailing?
Yeah. I don't email much when I'm drunk. Drunk slacking now.
There is an undo on delete or archive, which I really like, because I frequently accidentally click this sweep thing, and then I go, oh, whoop, and undo. That is very easy.
I'm waiting for Gina's next insight on ThinkUp, which is the tweets Jeff Jarvis should have deleted.
I'm working on that one now.
I got a funny insight. You're almost there.
Leo, do you know how many times I used the F word on Twitter in this year?
How many times?
What do you guess?
273.
merely 39.
What?
And then 40 when I complained about it. I was amazed.
What? You complain? Wait a minute. You complain and you used the F word twice when you complained?
Well, then I said OF.
OF, I don't use. So there, are you doing year-end insights on ThinkUp?
We are. We're doing best of 2014. We're doing one best of year-end insight per day in December, which have been really, really fun. People love them.
They've been great.
Oh, I got to go there now.
Oh, so glad you've been enjoying them.
And then Gina told me how many words I tweeted in the year. And, of course, I had to point out that 39 of them were the F word.
The F-bomb insight was, like, tailored for you, Jeff.
I was afraid you did it just for me. I was afraid it was called the Jarvis Insight.
All right, well, let me see here. I tweeted 10,483 words in 2014. How many did you?
That's good. I think I was like 12K.
That would be not very long, but that would be a book about 38 pages. For some reason, September was a busy month with 2,641 words. And then this is the Facebook thing.
I
want to know how many of those 10,000 words were F bombs.
So click on the see more button in the header there.
Oh.
Where it says best of 2014.
See more.
Yeah. And so these are all your best ofs.
Okay.
And then you'll see. If you've never used the F word, you don't have the insight at all. Because we're not trying to.
Right. You use the F word zero times.
Right. We don't show that insight.
I tweeted 78,933 words so far.
Wow.
73,000.
Wow.
78,000.
My updates resonated with men. 76% of my updates were liked or commented on by people who identify as male. Do you identify as male or female?
Well, yeah.
Oh, dear. 218 tweets had exclamation marks. That's almost a third. That's bad. That's not so good. This is my most popular picture on Twitter. This is when Lisa and I were featured in Mad Magazine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's my most popular picture ever. My most talkative day on Twitter was September 12th. I tweeted 28 times. Good Lord.
Tweet storm.
I don't see any F words.
Yeah, I think you kept it clean,
Leo.
I
kept it clean.
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted to Mark Andreessen 98 times in the year, and he replied 44 times.
Wow.
OMG, OMG, get a room, says ThinkUp.
Jeff and Mark sitting in a tree.
Drew Nielsen wants to know, do I need a paid membership to get these insights?
Nope. Free trial. If you sign up for the free trial right now, you will back all your insights for the month will be backfilled. So you'll get all your best ofs. And you got a free trial for the next 2 weeks. So you'll get all of them.
Now's the time. You've been putting it off. ThinkUp.com.
Yeah. This is the first time that we've had insights like go viral. People really talk about it. It makes a lot of sense. You know, December is when you kind of look back. But yeah, we've had kind of a gangbuster sign up day the last few days.
Good.
And it was like, oh, okay. Like people care about this stuff. But this is the time of year that people care about this stuff. Some of these have landed pretty well.
All about ego. Enough about it you. Is. What about me? How many times did I use the F word?
Yeah. Yeah, we had one called Twitter Bestie, which would tell you the person that you replied to the most and who replied back to you, the get a room one. And so that copy landed really well. And then people would be like, well, what about mine? And so it kind of traveled. You know, we'd see people tweet at one another, hey, you're my bestie. And then we'd watch that other person sign up. So it was really fun to see that. kind of trickle through the network.
Yeah.
Here's the one that's really most obnoxious. In 2014, 28% of Jeff Jarvis's tweets, a grand total of 2,511, contained the words "I, me, my, yeah. mine, or myself."
Yeah.
Sometimes you've just got to get personal.
No judgment.
No judgment. That's nice.
No judgment.
You used to have nice a judgment in that one, but you've took
we
it
did.
Out.
We did.
You took it out. I love it. That was a little ad for Think Up. We just
thank you. Yeah, thank
there.
You. That was unexpected. I appreciate that.
Gina, what do you think of these stories? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I am kind of excited about Android Studio 1.0 going unstable. We talked about this on All About Android last night, but I wanted to bring it up again because it's pretty neat. I've installed it and played around with it. It's really neat. So Android Studio is the IDE, the development tool that developers use to make Android apps. And Android Studio has been in beta for a while. We saw a demo of it at Google I.O., but it went stable just this week, which means
it's better than Eclipse.
It's better. It's definitely better. It's based on IntelliJ, and it's way better than Eclipse. And Google's clearly invested their resources into it and is using it to kind of guide developers. So when you create a new project in Android Studio, it'll say, you check boxes. Are you developing for Wear, TV, Android Auto? And what screen sizes you can as you change your layout, you can see the way that it would look on lots of different screen sizes. It's really, really nice. I have to say it's really slick. And I was kind of hesitant to use the beta versions. You know, you really don't want to release a production app using a beta tool, but now that it's stable, I feel like developers are really going to move over to it. It's quite nice. It's quite nice. And I think we're going to see a lot more apps with material design and laid out really nicely and working on all different screen sizes and form factors and for Wear and TV and Auto do a lot to this, you know, this tool, which is definitely better than Eclipse from what I can see.
IntelliJ was paid. Is this free?
This is free. Was nice. IntelliJ paid? I think so.
Yeah, you had to buy it. It was expensive, I think.
Yeah, this is definitely free. This is the official Android.
And it runs on Windows and Mac and Linux, of course.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, you have to install. I had a little funkiness. I had to install the JDK, and I had to edit one of the plist files on my Mac, but I got it working. It's quite.
You got to
nice
do this. Apple makes Xcode available for its developers, and it's a very nice IDE. And so you have to compete if you're going to get developers. You got to offer a nice environment. Microsoft has a Visual Studio, so I think it's something Google had to do.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And I think that a lot of developers, Java developers, feel like Eclipse is really old and clunky and slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this is kind of the next generation. It's really, really nice. So I think consumers are going to start to see some of the improvements that Studio improves or makes easier trickle down and, you know, starting, you know, really now and into next year.
It's exciting. You know, I was, because it's the hour of code, you know, and I like to celebrate that by learning a new language every year. By the way, everybody should take advantage of this hour of code now to learn programming something. It's fun.
The president did.
President wrote his first program.
Yeah, he's on GitHub.
What? He put it on GitHub?
Yeah, he's on GitHub.
What's his GitHub account?
It's President Obama, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see.
That's a good account.
Yeah, that's a good account, right? There's some great photos of him coding.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, there he is. Students. And look at, he doesn't have any repositories you can view, but he has
public activity.
He contributed to a repository for Sunlight Labs called U.S. Laws.
Yeah, he's opened a few issues there. That's great.
Look at that.
That's great.
Look at that. This is great. So I started looking at Go, Google's Go language.
Oh, good for you.
I like it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's they're replacing Python, I guess, really. Google,
right, well, because Google's a Python
Yeah,
power
and
company,
this
so.
Is Python-ish, but not a lot of the issues people have, like the white space issue, are gone on this. And they have a very nice tour, which I highly recommend if people want to play with it, with an integrated interactive interpreter. So you can actually walk your way through many of the features of Go in this little Go playground, interactively. You know what they have that's so cool? They say just ignore formatting. You know, type it how you want it. because they have this button and they have a formatter that you run it through. It will reformat everything to the kind of standard that everybody adheres to.
So it doesn't have the white space.
It doesn't use white space. Python. Now it uses braces more as a result. Mm-hmm. But no, I think it's a very nice, very interesting language. And of course, concurrency is built in, you know, because it's really a web programming language more than mm-hmm. Python was. So I think really nice and very easy to learn. There's a lot of resources online, of course. But start with a tour of Go. If you're a programmer or you'd like to learn programming, I think this would be a good choice.
Makes a good language?
For learning, in my opinion, a good language, I think having an interpreter that you can try stuff in is really important. That was one of the real advantages mm-hmm. Python had. That you can just say 2 + 2 and see what happens and hit return. But then also kind of a cleanliness of syntax and a lot of easy to understand good libraries helps. I think it's nicely done. I'm very impressed.
It's always sort of a delicate balance between brevity and clarity, being able to read,
right.
being able to read code and get a sense of what it's doing, having it easy to debug. I think having code that's easy to debug is really important, because most of your time you're not writing code, right? Like most of your time you're debugging code.
Right.
You're figuring out why the code you wrote didn't work,
so
or the code that
lot.
Someone else wrote
right.
didn't work.
They do a lot of around that. That's why they have the formatter. They have a formatter and a documenter that takes, most languages have features like this, but it's even in this tutorial that they have the format button. So they're really emphasizing that. I think this is good. It's funny. The one note that I read was there was a really strong debate internally in Google. They use braces a lot. And a lot of the Google programmers, can you just use brackets? That'll save millions of shift key presses. Just use, because a brace is shift bracket. I said, could you just please use bracket? But no, they decided to use braces. If you've used Python or C, it will be very easily clear to you immediately what how the language works. And it's nicely, I think it's elegant. It's very nicely done. So speaking of code, and then run out and download the Android Studio.
Yeah.
Start writing your new app.
Yeah, build Hello World for your Android phone.
Yeah. I'm going to do that. I'll start messing with my phone.
Yeah, you should. You should. Yeah. I think, yeah.
It's fun. Jeff Jarvis, what story did you like in there?
I think you did a great job of covering it. I guess all I'll do is I want to give a plug to
Did I
Andy
steal your
Cartman,
story, as
amazing.
Always?
No, you didn't. No, you didn't do a thing. You just did a brilliant job as host, as you always do.
You are too sweet.
You went around. You found the best berries in the patch.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm a berry bearer. Andrew Carvin, you want to plug Andy for something?
Andy, who's a great
new job,
a tweeter of tweeters, and he started something called Reportedly as part of Pierre Omidyar's venture. And the idea there is very simple, is to go take journalism to people where they live in Facebook and Instagram and such.
Neat.
I think it's very interesting. So let's give a plug to Andy.
Where do I find Reportedly?
Reportedly, it's at Medium. So it's
okay.
medium.com/reportedly.
And they also have a Twitter account.
While I'm plugging.
Yes.
On Medium. Let me mention that I started last week, after the last show, putting the entirety of Geeks Bearing Gifts, my book, up on Medium for free,
awesome.
Chapter by chapter. So
awesome.
If you go to
medium.com/geeks-bearing-gifts,
you will find the latest chapter on top, and I'll be putting them up bit by bit as we go, and it'll all be free there.
I will be
nice.
Reading that.
Nice URL. Very nice.
Yeah. I cannot wait.
Medium did a great job designing it.
I was going to say, this is really beautiful layout.
Not that page.
Except for that page. They did
except
a great job.
Yeah, except for that page. But there, that's nice, yes.
Medium seems to be taking off. I mean, I'm impressed they got Stephen Levy to run their editorial.
He's doing
effort.
Great stuff. Kate Lee, my old agent, Kate Lee, is getting stars and celebrities and smart people up on Medium to publish. They really are doing a very good job.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that Carvin started a whole new news venture on Medium, I think, is significant.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's, I'm sure, what Ev Williams, who created Medium, loves to hear.
And he has Kate Lee and Evan Hansen and Stephen Levy all working there. They're top-notch editors, and good things are going to happen.
So I'm sure that Andy's going to do a great job, and this is going to be really cool because he does incredible work. But I have to share with y'all a pet peeve of mine, which is any startup name, particularly one that has to do with writing that ends in L-Y, because I had this hatred of adverbs kind of like banged into my head
adverbs.
As an English major.
No
so adverbs. I always feel sad when I see the .ly. But I get it's also just a domain name thing. But that's okay. But
well, also you're pouring money into Libya. I don't know if that's a good thing either. That's who owns .ly. That's not a problem.
One of our best graduates has a site called Narratively. There's another one called Contently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I briefly owned DAI.ly, and I let it
really?
Go. Yeah. And then I let it
made
go.
Made some money.
No, I just didn't renew it. And then I had Geekly for a while.
Wow.
All right. The story really? I picked, and I'm hoping that we're going to cover a little bit of this. On Sunday on Twit, we're trying to get iJustine on it because she is one of the people in the new YouTube Rewind. YouTube started doing this a few years ago where they'd make a video that rewinds the year. This one, out of control, they shot this in eight locations, five principal shooting days. They're at all the YouTube spaces, LA, New York, Tokyo, London. Many YouTube stars featured in it. Great music, a few mainstream celebrities as well, including PewDiePie. So part of the game is to see how familiar you are with YouTube memes, because all of these people are famous on YouTube. And
oh,
as an old man, I can tell you, I recognize about five. Remember that video, though, right? The adamantium claws. They did a nice job of transitioning.
Let's take a selfie.
I think that was Jimmy Kimmel, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It's a gun.
Oh, suddenly we're in Tokyo and New York City.
That's New York, yeah.
The grounds of a stately mansion. I love this guy. I don't know who he is, but I love him. This is good, too. I don't know who these guys are. That is a neat effect. There's London.
What did this cost?
Well, I'm trying to think of it. It's got to be tens of millions. I don't know. Maybe not. But what it tells you, I was trying to think, why does YouTube do this? Partly it's to make these people feel like stars, which they are.
I think it is, because if you don't know YouTube, this isn't going to say anything to you.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they had to celebrate the Ice Bucket Challenges, which took over YouTube for a few months this summer. And there's quite a few. They really handle this well, the transitions from set to set are really well done, I think. Everybody's dumping water on each other. And, I had Michael, our 11-year-old. I sat him down. I said, do you know these people? And he named every one of them.
Wow.
He said, oh, yeah, that's...
Well, you know, they do ads. YouTube does ads on the subway in Manhattan here with different YouTube stars. And I never know any of them.
No.
I'm like, oh... That channel must be great.
It's kind of fragmented because... Is that Michelle Phan? It's kind of fragmented because nobody knows... Well, I wouldn't think anybody would know all of them. He did. Kids do, I guess. Or he didn't know all of them.
How does it feel to be old, Gina?
Rhett and Link, I know them.
Yeah, no, it makes me feel really old. I thought, I was like, I toyed with the idea in 2015, at least for a couple of months, to just do to be Instagram and Tumblr only, because that's clearly where the kids are, and YouTube.
That's Jenna Marbles,
Twitch,
right?
Maybe. Yeah. Go crazy. But I would be a stranger in a strange land.
It's pretty well done, I gotta say.
It's an epic video.
The rights involved in this, the music, of course. It's really nicely done. A lot of these, the sets were from YouTube spaces in New York, L.A., London, and Tokyo.
Did anyone we know work on this?
Creepy. Whoa. Creepy baby.
I'll bet our former producer.
Eileen.
Eileen for sure worked on the LA stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did Eileen work on this?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Here's John Oliver. Look.
I saw Eileen. I didn't tell you. I saw her in New York. When they opened the space there, she spent like 3 months getting
young
it ready.
President. Oh, yeah, she was part of that. Great. Big Bird.
So I know Big Bird.
Yeah, there's some
totally recognize
there's some
Big
mainstream
Bird.
Stuff. Hello. Here comes Conan.
Coco.
little Flappy Bird action. A few of these are viral videos, but most of them are channels, right? A few of them, like the adamantium claws. And here's Justina's in this one. Look at this.
Oh, nice. A little Frozen action.
Yeah. This is really quite well done.
Yeah, this is great.
I'll pause it when we see. There's Justine right there.
Nice.
Hey, Justine.
Hey, we know one person in this whole dang video. It's pretty spectacular. Although, you know, I mean, all this stuff could be done with green screen and so forth. They do what's nice, besides putting all of the YouTube channel stars in here, they also give them credit at the end. So there we are in Tokyo. And you'll see if you didn't know, there's a guide at the end. Oh, by the way, here's a hamster eating a YouTube gumdrop.
Oh, okay, that's cute.
So
is this like the guide for old people who don't know what's going on?
If you aren't smart, here's who you just saw: PewDiePie, Skydas, Minecraft, Jenna Marbles, Bethany Moda,
PewDiePie,
Smosh, Rhett & Link, Michelle Phan, Jimmy Kimmel, Big Bird, John Oliver, Stephen Colbert, Chris Hardwick's in this, Conan O'Brien. Those are the big star guys. Freddie Wong, Epic Rap Battles, everybody knows them. Amazing Phil. Yeah, just shows you. The Gregory Brothers.
I love these names. I don't even.
Yeah. Well, these people are all pretty big, I would say, with millions of subscribers on all of those channels.
Mm-hmm.
Kid President, love him. Vsauce 2 and 3. Tiny Hamster.
The hamster's still nibbling.
Tiny Hamster, iJustine. Enjoy Phoenix, Bart Baker. Makeup by Maddie. There you go. That is the Big YouTube. They are pretty amazing, the Big YouTube Rewind. Each year they get crazier and crazier. Remember last year was a parody on here's an animated PewDiePie.
Oh, this is how it should have ended?
How it should have ended. Watch, he jumps into the roof and faceplant. Turned down for 2014. They have a behind the scenes. You can go back to the 2013, the 2012, 2011.
Susan Wojcicki is investing.
Yeah. It makes sense to me that they would.
It does.
Because you want to keep those stars happy. So making them bigger stars, that's good for everybody. And, you know, I think about my usage of YouTube. Well, obviously yours too. We didn't know who any of those people are. How do we use YouTube?
I watch Elmo with my kid.
Yeah, or a viral clip or embedded video from other things.
Yeah.
I think that's probably how most people use YouTube, but maybe not the most avid YouTube users who are the people who subscribe to all these people's channels.
Leo, did you see the news at the bottom of that YouTube block that totally ties into what you're talking about here? Google offering its top makers bonuses to sign multi-year deals so that they won't be lured away. So it's, you know.
Yeah, because Yahoo's threatening, right, to steal some of these people.
Yeah, this article.
And I am in the hunt with some big bucks looking to sign some YouTube stars. Interesting. They want to lock them in for several years. Hey, my advice, kids, get an agent before you sign that deal.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is really just happy to see companies vying to pay independent content creators. Right. You know, lots
of
money.
Do you think YouTube tries to shape the kind of content by the money they throw around? Or do they just say, hey, you're a star, I'm going to give you money?
I don't think it's more shape, but there is a quasi-approval process to use their space.
Uh-huh.
And I asked about that when I was at the opening. And basically what they're saying, well, we're just trying to save you the hassle of making something and then finding out that it violated some rule or something.
Okay.
So let us know what you're going to make before you make it.
Okay. I have a feeling that if I were Susan, I would definitely want to reward the most lucrative partners, because frankly, you wouldn't have thought PewDiePie, who basically sits in comments and swears during gameplay videos would be the number one attraction on YouTube, but he is. So you don't want to discourage that, but at the same time, don't you want to shape YouTube a little bit as to the kind of content? I doubt there are many crotch shot video guys getting money.
Well, it's just like Medium. I hate this made up word. It's platisher, but you're a platform and a publisher at the same time. Any crap can go up there because you're a platform.
Platisher.
Like the platypus, it's something that could never exist in nature, but does.
So it's like it's curated user generated content.
Yeah. You can promote the best. You can have a brand. It makes it possible to have a brand because you can show the best stuff. But
I think it's fantastic. I if you think about the transformation YouTube has made, it's unbelievable. And it's unpredictable.
In internet years, but yeah, I mean, it's been huge. And
it's unpredictable. And you would never have predicted it.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube, by the way, will tell you now if you have copyrighted music, how it will affect your video. Because one of the problems is some record companies will have your video pulled down. Others will just put an ad on it. And you don't know ahead of time. So now their content ID system will help you figure out if you're using copyrighted music and what the label or the artist will do. Will it mute the audio? Will it block the video from being seen? Or will it monetize? That's a good feature. So that's something that's a search feature in the audio library will help you with that. Most serious YouTube creators will know all about that, but the rest of us with our crotch shot videos, hey, you never know what's going to happen. All right, let's take a break. Your picks of the week or your tip, tool, and number of the week coming up. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital. Here's my tip for you. Prepare for the future. Retirement is sooner than you think, trust me. And if you're not thinking about it now, even if you're in your 20s, you ought to be. The problem, of course, is a challenge because your accounts are spread out all over the place. You've got monies here. You've got loans there, and you don't know where everything stands. I bet you don't even know what your net worth is. Personal Capital will help. Go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's a free tool that will put everything on a single page on your computer, on your tablet, on your phone, with real-time intuitive graphs that'll let you know how you're doing, what you're worth, will help you budget, will help you plan for the future. They even have an Android Wear app you can download in the Play Store that will seamlessly integrate with Personal Capital on your phone to give you relevant and timely updates on your financial situation. They'll also tell you if you're overpaying in management fees, if you've got your 401k properly distributed for your planned retirement time, all sorts of tools like that. It is your personal financial dashboard, and there's no reason not to use it because it's absolutely free. Please do yourself a favor. Your older self will thank you for it. PersonalCapital.com/Twig. It's free and it's a smart way to grow your money, and we are thrilled to have them as part of our show. And it only works if you all go there right now. PersonalCapital.com/Twig. Gina Trapani has a tip of the week.
So my tip, this isn't actually my tip, but it led me to my tip. The Play Store is doing a promo where if you buy a Chromecast, they're giving you a $20 Play Store credit before, I believe, December 21st. So if you still want to do that, you can do that. And in researching that, I saw that you can go to Chromecast.com/offers. The Play Store has put out a lot of offers for Chromecast owners. As we know, I took advantage of the Netflix one when I first got my Chromecast. But there are other ones. And if you don't know what offers are available for your Chromecast whenever you bought it, you can go to Chromecast.com/offers. The page will actually prompt you to connect to your Chromecast, and then it'll show you if you have any open offers that you can take advantage of associated with your Chromecast. I had a few, which I was totally unaware of. The special offers and time off or subscription or discounts to various things. So you can check that out if you got a Chromecast, Chromecast.com/offers. Do it on the network that your Chromecast is plugged in, and you can see what's available. And if you buy that one between now and the 21st, you get $20 in Google Play credit, which basically brings the cost of it down to like $15 or something. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Cool.
Yeah.
But you have to be on the same network, so I can't do it here.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, you do have to be on the same network as your Chromecast.
Actually, what I could do, I'm on a network that has some Chromecasts on. I can see. No Chromecasts. All right. Oh, well.
Sorry about that.
Chromecast.com/offers. Jeff Jarvis, number of the week. muted?
I violated your rule, Leo. I agreed to an embargo.
So don't tell us. Just give us the number, but don't tell us what it means.
Looks like it's leaking.
Oh, it's leaking.
No. Leaking, and I don't. But I did agree, so I.
This is why we don't agree to embargoes, because then others can cover the story, and we have no.
I know. Well, it was going to be 11:30 tomorrow morning, and now
put the link in. Put the link in because I didn't agree to the embargo. No, it's all right. It's all right. Is it a big deal?
All I'll say is this: you have to translate. I think it's a very big deal in my world, and all I got to say is you'd have to translate from the Spanish.
Oh, well, never mind. Does it have to do with Leistungsschutzrecht?
Ja, das ist wahr, ja, richtig. Aber in Espanol. All right, so Instagram hits 300 million monthly users, now beating Twitter.
Really?
That's a yow, I think.
Yeah, that's a yow.
What?
Yeah.
What? And you get verified badges.
You know, well, the kids these days ain't using Twitter.
I about 6 months ago realized that the only social network I ever use that makes me happy is Instagram, because it's just pictures.
Yeah, not controversial. Right.
I don't read the comments because that can get a little weird. Just look at pretty pictures. I love Instagram. They're not filtering the feed. It's just pretty pictures, and you.
I mean, it is Facebook. It is owned by Facebook, at least. But yeah,
right.
I hear you.
Pretend it's not. Pretend it's not. Let me look at the popular feed here and see. They've changed this a little bit. So so you can look at popular photos or now popular people. And you can see, this is what people I know have liked, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That's a new discovery feature.
How do you know, I haven't used Instagram enough. How do you use it?
Let's do an Instagram right now.
What's your day on Instagram? What are
you
doing?
So I launched my photo thing. Okay, so I'm going to take a picture. The one thing that's a pisser with Instagram is it has to be square. So a picture that you would normally take, I'm going to take a picture of my keyboard. There we go. And say my word of the week. So I'll take a picture of that. It's good to take it with Instagram, but you don't have to. You can load it from some other thing. My word of the week is Excelsior. Then you apply a filter. This is what everybody says made Instagram the hit it is, because you can take a really ugly picture and make it look much more interesting just applying a filter. Then you continue on, and Gina's going to help me. You can tag people in it. You can add the photo to a map. You can also cross-share to Facebook, Tumblr, Flickr, Twitter, or Foursquare, including a Foursquare check-in. You also write a caption. Now, the pros use this as an opportunity to add 80 or 90 hashtags.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't know how they tippity-tap. They must have some hashtag machine, some hashtag engine that does this.
Oh, I didn't know that there was SE or Instagram optimization.
Seriously.
Instagram engine optimization.
Seriously. Okay. So I'm just going to write and then you can also, as in Twitter, use hashtags to make, kind of comments and stuff. My word of the day. And then you can say something like hashtag. Here's a good one. Sorry, not sorry. I like that hashtag. It's completely meaningless in this context, but okay. And now I press check and I go. Now, one thing Instagram added, and they've fortunately been slow to add too many features, is this direct messaging capability, which I don't use, but you do have an ability to directly send it out. But otherwise, it's going to be sent to my followers, which it is. And now it's sent it out, and there's my Instagram post. Jeff, you should do it. It's fun. People can then heart it by double tapping it.
Oh, I do it. I just don't do it. Here's the only problem. I don't think of it often enough. I don't think, I take a photo. I share it on Twitter. I share it on Google+. Don't laugh. I don't share it so much on Facebook, actually, obviously. Yeah. But I should do it more on Instagram.
Well, and you can cross-post to Facebook. So if you wish, you could, just use start an Instagram.
Yeah.
The thing is, again, I have to say this. Instagram always makes me happy. The only bad thing that happens with Instagram, sometimes a little FOMO. I'm looking at all the web postings right now, and I wish I were in Paris. I'm following Chris Michel. Do you know who he is? He started military.com. He is turned into an amazing kind of Leica-style street photographer. If you want somebody, Christopher Michael, if you want somebody to follow on Instagram, it's M-I-C-H-E-L is his last name. Let me just show you.
Christopher Michael?
Yeah. Instagram. Let me just show you his feed. This is another thing Instagram did, I think, which is really great. They finally added a web component. For the longest time, you couldn't go look at people's Instagram pictures on the web.
Right.
And that was a real pain in the butt. And there were a lot of third-party apps to handle that. Nope, that's not his Instagram. I have to figure out what his... Oh, it's Chris, I think. Chris underscore Michael. Let's try that. Chris underscore Michael. Let's see if that's it. But he is not a professional photographer.
Is it?
That's it. And he's doing a lot of beautiful kind of black and white stuff of all the people you know in the industry. Entrepreneurs.
Oh, yeah, I recognize some of these folks.
Yeah, there's Kevin Rose and Tony Conrad. And a beautiful picture. I mean, I really think these are beautiful pictures. So this is all at LaWeb. And this is the bad thing. The only bad thing is that I get depressed because people are having better lives than I have. Look at this picture of
I didn't even realize LaWeb was on, by the way.
I know. But see, if you are on Instagram, look at that. And I also can tell from this picture that they're at Guy Savoie at Loic's yearly dinner party at the best restaurant in Paris. And that makes me even more pissed off.
Oh.
I want to be there.
Oh,
I want to be there. There's Loic meditating. He's big into meditating now. Loic Lemur, the entrepreneur. There's Loic and Geraldine, his beautiful wife. They are the organizers of LaWeb, although they've sold it, but I think they still run it. It's just, these are great pictures that Chris takes.
Still run it.
Yeah. So this is why you follow somebody on Instagram. A lot of photographers on there.
Oh, yeah. No, I like them. Yeah. I got to think of it.
Yeah. Well, I do. I put it on my front page.
Well, and I mean, Jeff, you're a writer. I mean, you're both writers, but you're a word guy.
Right. That's a good point, Jeff Clavier. Yeah. Here's Tim Berners-Lee, who was the keynote speaker on LaWeb this year, talking to Loic.
Who was complaining about the right to be forgotten on stage at LaWeb.
Our friend Bradley. Yeah.
A friend indeed.
Yeah, so this is fun. They all look so French. So French. Anyway. Okay, I don't know how we got into that. But let me tell you. I know how, because it's bigger than Twitter now. And now I know why. And I know why. You can't troll people on Instagram. You can only put up nice pictures. The worst thing you could do is make me feel bad about my life, because I'm not in the
Bahamas. Can you? Well, that's the question. Can you? What can you do?
That's my own flaw.
What do bad people do on Instagram?
Well, you can post crappy comments on someone's photo.
Comments are the big problem on Instagram, yeah.
Yeah.
And they currently have no way to delete
comments. But I can control them, can I?
No.
No, you can't.
That's a flaw.
Well, I can't delete some bozo's comments?
No, it's very frustrating.
That's a mistake.
I'm sure I hope they'll fix that. It is a mistake. Damon Wayans, we had on, the great comedian who we had on our show, Triangulation, a couple of weeks ago, has been using it to do commentary, which is sometimes very profane. He has this new app that lets you embed video into a little TV into an Instagram movie. So he's talking, and I don't know if we should play it because I don't know. Sometimes it could be. But it's funny. He's a good guy to follow. Damon's very funny. And this is he doesn't like Charles Barkley. Yeah. Charles Barkley's been kind of controversial. Oh, wow. Look at that. A lot of interesting commentary on Garner and Ferguson and so forth. So I can see why it's got 300. Hey, I got a treat for you. Here's my tool of the week. Nokia, before they got sold to Microsoft, really made a great suite of apps called the Hear apps. many thought that Nokia's Here Maps were the best nav tool out there. It is available now. It's come out of beta. I've been using it for a while, and Samsung was offering it on their Samsung store for Samsung phones only. But now it's on all Android devices, Nokia Here Maps. And, you know, of course you're going to continue to use Waze and Google Maps. I'm not saying replace it. But one thing that's great about Here Maps, you can download the maps. And the maps can be all of – I have downloaded all of the United States. So I can use this completely offline from now on as a turn-by-turn nav. It's among the best nav tools out there, and it doesn't need to be online. It just needs a GPS. So it's free. It's available. It's still beta, but it is available on all Android devices now. Hard to find in the Play Store. It just went live today, and so you know how sometimes it takes a while to propagate through search. But if you search for Here Beta, and the maker is Nokia Apps, don't be fooled. There are some fakes. Here Beta. Very good turn-by-turn. Just one more thing to have on your phone in addition to Google Maps. If you're offline, it's very handy, and you forget to download ahead of time. I put the entire United States on there as a few gigabytes. But you can download maps from all over the world. And because it's Nokia, they really have excellent representation all over the world. Asia, Australia, and you can do country by country. So next time you're in Hong Kong, just download the Hong Kong map before you go. That's my tip. Tool and number of the week. We are done, my friends. Gina Trapani, smarterware. I'm sorry. ThinkUp.com.
ThinkUp. Let's just say ThinkUp. ThinkUp.com.
And scribbling.
Scribbling.net. Yes. Where I haven't been doing very much scribbling.
No.
But
we all go through this phase. I'm going to blog again.
I'm going to write another blog post about how I resolved to blog again. And then it'll be like 6 months. And then it'll be another post about how I resolved to blog again.
Exactly.
This is a lot of fun today.
Great to
have
you.
I like when it's just the three of us. I love our guests, but I also
it's cozier. Just
the four of
us
with Jason.
Yep, with Jason too.
Yes.
Gina is also a host of All About Android Tuesday nights, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Twit. And that's a great show if you're an Android user. A must
watch. We have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have to watch that every week. Jason Howell's also the host. Jeff Jarvis, we love you. CUNY, City University of New York. There are a lot of very lucky students.
We love you too.
Hey, did one of your students get arrested?
Yes, one of our students did get arrested in the protests after the I Can't Breathe, the lack of an indictment against the cop who did the chokehold.
And what was she doing wrong? Journalism? She was practicing journalism in public?
She was taking pictures. She was taking pictures. They told her to move. She moved. As she said, evidently not fast enough, and they wouldn't recognize her press pass, which we issue because it wasn't a police-issued press pass. Well, get used to it, NYPD. You don't decide who the press is anymore.
Yeah!
You do.
Yeah.
Why should they decide? That's the last people you want to decide this stuff.
Amen.
Let the authorities decide who gets to cover what's going on. It's called the Fourth Estate for a reason.
Yeah, the authorities in question.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Oh, no, you can't cover this. So
you're covering the authorities, and the authorities tell you can't do it.
Oh, no, you don't have a permit to cover us. That sounds a little bit like, I don't know, North Korea. So she's out of jail?
She was just, you know, giving her whatever they call it.
They spanked her or whatever, but let her go. Okay.
Jerry Hester, who was the former city editor of the Daily News, who heads our student news service, said that during the Republican convention, he was getting those calls all the time about his reporters.
Yeah. All right, my friends, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. We do this show every Wednesday
afternoon. Watch the news tomorrow morning.
Because it'll break. Like, what is the Spanish word?
It'll break, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Leistungsschutzrecht.
That's all I'll say. You'll see the news tomorrow, and you'll know that why I'm bursting at the seams right now.
Oh, wow. It's a big story.
An embargo.
Big story. Wow.
I think it is.
We invite you to stop by live if you can. If you can't, don't worry. On-demand audio and video, always available after the fact. Twit.tv/twig, YouTube.com/thisweek, Google, or wherever you find your shows, your internet shows. Make sure you subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.